Could you start by talking a little bit about your regular job and how your routine has changed since the COVID outbreak?
Yeah, so I have a sort of a dual job at Mass General and at Harvard Medical School. At Mass General, I direct a clinical teaching service for the Department of Medicine, where a group of physicians work closely with medical students and residents during their clinical inpatient education in the inpatient medicine services in the hospital at the Department of Medicine at Mass General. So essentially, we are the attendings of record of the teaching services, of many of the teaching services at the, in the program in the Department of Medicine. And, our team has medical students and residents, and basically we take care of patients in the context of being clinical teachers. And in addition, I am the Associate Dean for Undergraduate Medical Education for Harvard Medical School at Mass General. And in that capacity, I spend, the other half of my life, so to speak, being responsible for the education courses and clerkships and electives and any clinical activities that take place inside of the hospital for medical students, for undergraduate medical students. The pandemic disrupted both sides of my life tremendously. In one way, all medical students on March 16, a communication from the AAMC from the American Association of Medical Colleges was released, sort of recommending that students be removed from the clinical environment. And so we had to, sort of follow the guidance and overnight create an enormous amount of virtual curricula for the medical students whose life all of a sudden became, as you can imagine, completely disrupted by the inability to continue medical school at all years and at all levels. So that part of our job got really crazy really quick. In addition to that, I was also, carrying on my clinical duties, and through the pandemic, the Department of Medicine and the hospital put forward an effort to try to, prepare for what was likely to be an incredible amount of work and surge of patients with COVID disease. And so, in that capacity, I, served as the attending of record in several teams that throughout the pandemic or throughout the crisis took care of patients in the hospital, in the Department of Medicine, as the need arose. So that sort of, as you can imagine, both sides of, again, both sides of my professional life, I guess, or professional duties became overnight quite hectic.
Definitely. Could you talk a little bit more about the virtual opportunities that you developed for the medical students?
Yeah, so as I said, at all levels of medical school, from first year to senior year to fourth year, we had to sort of turn around almost overnight and develop virtual curricula. As you can imagine, a lot of the clinical courses, turning them virtually is very challenging. It's very difficult to continue to learn how to do a physical exam or to do an operation virtually. But with the help of all of our course directors and the amazing, ability and great expertise of both Harvard Medical School and all the clinical faculty that we have, we were able to turn around pretty quickly and create, sort of parallel worlds to what they would have been doing in the hospital in some ways through simulation and through virtual, platforms. A lot of it also through Zoom meetings. Lectures were given in that format by the faculty who were supposed to lead them anyway. And, we, I would say, made it a pretty, a pretty fruitful engagement and a pretty fruitful experience for the students. But again, as you can imagine, nothing is quite the same as being there in person, seeing patients, etc.
Right. On the other side of things, could you talk about some of the structural changes and precautions that have been implemented in the hospital?
Yeah, so the majority of what we had to prepare for with COVID was the need for personal protection of all healthcare workers. And in addition, to sort of stop the spread, there was an effort from the very beginning to try to protect everyone who was to enter the hospital. So a universal mask wearing policy was instituted, and everybody who walks into the hospital must wear a mask 24/7 when they're in the presence of anybody else. As much as possible, social distancing was obviously kept. In addition, we were required to wear the appropriate personal protection equipment that you hear so much in the news, from N95 masking to gowning to face shields, whenever we believed to be in the presence of a person who was potentially infected with COVID. A number of protocols were developed, and the hospital was continuously developing changing environment protocols that were needed to try to contain the infection spread. Again, from sort of policies all around how to eat and where to eat, policies on how long someone could wear specific mask, and the reuse of PPE or personal protection equipment. There was just an enormous amount of work that every day one had to sort of just, keep abreast of from our infectious control experts, as well as from the CDC guidance and our occupational health department in the hospital. So I think that in some ways, we were very lucky that we work for places like Mass General and Harvard, et cetera, where, world expertise around infectious disease and COVID became sort of almost an overnight sensation or overnight reality. We had some of the world leaders on the matter. So we were well guided and well directed. You can imagine that one of the big challenges again was sort of all the policies that kept changing on day in, day out.
A lot of the doctors have talked about kind of this gradual income of information and how the list of symptoms for COVID keeps changing and how difficult that is to treat patients while getting all of this new information all the time. Is that one of the challenges that you found?
I think bigger than that, to me, the challenge was not the clinical. I mean, the clinical challenge was continues to evolve and continues to be just overwhelming on how different patients with COVID present. But I think even more unsettling or more difficult is the ever-changing nature of how little we know about the disease, and not just how people present, but how it spreads. And like I say, every day there would be a something that you have to read about policy, and so that was a little bit of the unsettling nature and what made everybody somewhat anxious. We've never had anything near, nothing even close to this or near this. I mean, just remember that one good day on March 13, you basically went to bed and you woke up the next day, and the sort of the country was shutting down.
Right.
And we've never dealt with anything like this. So I think the challenge is, clinical. Yeah, there's no question that the gravity and the illness and how sick these people are is no question unsettling. But even more is the fact that there is so much that we don't know about these virus and its properties and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I think that it makes everybody very very uneasy. And
Definitely.
the thing is the challenge of not knowing. We're all scientists, so the first thing that everybody wants to do in our profession is figure out why. And it is very, again, makes one very uneasy when you can't figure out why, and this thing is advancing quickly.
Are there any memorable patient experiences, either directly or indirectly related to COVID, that you could share?
Yes, I think that it's a little hard because they're easy to to violate some of the HIPAA laws by sharing, but I think some of the most touching memories of the last 2.5 months for me have been the patients who arrived so late, meaning they waited so long to come to the hospital because they were so scared to be in the hospital because of what they were hearing in the news about the spread of COVID. I've never seen so much illness and it quite, you know, such a short period of time and such advanced stages of some of the illness because people just waited too long. Because again, the fear of quote unquote coming to the hospital, particularly a place like Mass General that had so much COVID activity. So more than, you know, I think that I could tell you a number of patient, you know, examples, but more than that is the memory that I have of again, you know, seeing such degree of illness and perhaps I think everybody sort of shares with you the their experience of seeing patients with COVID not being able to have family members visit them. You know, I was fortunate to be the majority of the time in non-COVID floor in some ways, and in some other ways unfortunate, because you know people do turn out to be or to rule into the disease while they were in what they, you know, what we would call clean floors, and you know it was very scary for them and scary for all. And at the same time, I think one of the biggest, saddest things that I remember from these past weeks is when things weren't going well and somebody was either dying or died or didn't, you know, things didn't turn out well. It was very sad and very difficult to not be able to have the family come in to help and to touch, you know, to touch base with or to be there, you know, to touch, to grab their hand or to help them through the disease. You know, it was just incredibly difficult to talk to families on the phone and to give them updates without being able to be there, you know. We were lucky [S2] Okay. [S1] To have a lot of iPads that gave us a little bit of that sort of virtual visit from family, but again, not the same as being there and touching your family member, particularly when people don't do well and you know, you want to be there. So that's sort of my memory. It's again, you know, one of conquest in terms of, you know, I think things could have gone a lot worse. I think that is incredibly, I'm incredibly proud of the work that was done, how the Mass General and others organized around and rallied around to prepare for this incredible surge. And we were so ready for absolutely whatever came our way that it was an unbelievable effort and how well organized the hospital and the healthcare system was. So in that, on one hand, it was that pride, and on the other hand is the sadness that you see from what you hear in the news, you know, so many people not doing well.
Right. In a lot of my other interviews, people have talked about the strength and sense of community among health workers. Could you talk a little bit about your experience with that?
Yes, I think that if there's one thing that I always tell the dean and the medical students when I'm on Zoom with them, that is perhaps the biggest miss of the entire crisis for me was the fact that the medical students were my medical students, my just dear, medical students weren't there to see this amazing display of camaraderie, this unprecedented collaboration across the spectrum of healthcare workers, from physical therapists to doctors to nurses, to the person that brings you dinner, brings the patient their lunch, to the person that cleans the room after the patient is done. You know, it was an unbelievable feeling because all of us were, you know, notably, you know, again, uneasy, unsettled, scared. And it was just unbelievable to be able to sort of look at each other in the eye through the mask and through our shields and to just look at each other and say, you know, we're all in this together. You're okay, I'm okay, and we're gonna get through this together. And, you know, just by glancing at across the floor at each other or by sharing a little, you know, sort of smile with your eyes because nobody could see your mouth and or maybe even a gesture because nobody could shake hands or be close to each other, right? So through any sign that you could make, it was clear that we were all there for each other, and that we were this troop on the floor at this crisis moment, realizing that it was amazing to have each other. And you know, how odd that when one needs the most to be able to have a hug by somebody or shake a hand or give high five, you know, that was precisely what COVID deprived us of. So right. we needed each other more than ever, just through, I said, through a glance or a look or a you know, sort of a, I don't know, just whatever signal we could send each other that we were okay and that we were going to be all okay and that we were in this together. So it was an incredible manifestation, just an incredible display of friendship and collegiality and equality. And, you know, there were no ranks and there was no, I'm above you or you're below me, or it was just unreal.
That's really incredible.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that strength and sense of community has translated to society, or do you feel like the pandemic has divided us more?
I don't know. I think that we live in a moment where, for whatever reason, it just seems like people have a tendency to politicize and polarize anything they can get their hands on. I find it invariably just boring and fastidious that people have to turn to that. I think a moment like this has all the makings of a potential, you know, silver lining for civilization in some way, that we should come out of this more resilient, stronger, more resourceful. But it is true that the isolation of being confined, you know, families that have had to spend so much time together in four walls without the touch and the sort of sharing and joy of having friends and family over, etc., I think have made us in some ways much stronger as a family unit. I think that I've never seen so many families to spend so much time together and you know, learn so much about each other, but certainly it has been a struggle societally for people to connect. So I'm still kind of waiting for that silver lining moment over the next few months when the country, you know, society comes together and rallies behind what's left after a crisis like this, which is incredible need for rebuilding. But I don't know why. I'm sort of a crazy optimist, and I have no doubt that, like any other catastrophe in history, from the 1918, you know, flu pandemic to, you know, to a horrible event like, you know, Katrina's New Orleans, you know, horrific death toll, I think that you see people rallying behind each other and sort of pulling up their boots and saying, you know, we're going to rebuild and we're going to do better than ever. And I don't know, this is sort of the amazing thing about living in this country and being part of this society, that you know, sort of no matter whether you are a healthcare worker or a, you know, restaurant worker, you look to tomorrow to say, you know, how do we rebuild? How do we get back, not to where we were, but better? And I just have no doubt. I have zero doubt and all the faith that we will conquer it again and we'll get there and beyond. So, yeah.
I definitely hope so.
Yeah, we will. I have no doubt. We'll get through it.
Are there any common misconceptions that you hear among patients or even in the media about COVID?
I think that you hear all the time, it doesn't affect the young, and I saw plenty of young people with it. It doesn't affect the blankety blank, and it does. It affects everyone. It affects every kind, every you know, age group. It was eye opening, you know, compared to past sort of epidemics, you know, to a much, much, much smaller scale that we've seen, like the flu of 2005 and 2009 or H1N1, that, you know, there was no particular, you know, group that it left behind. But I think that, I think that perhaps what has been not most telling to me is that you cannot turn the news on, even tonight, as we hang up with this interview. You'll learn about some other new study or myth or you know, scientific concept or thought about COVID that will have everybody, you know, sort of scared to death that you know, this thing is coming back, or that is passed on through these droplets or through these, you know, surfaces, etc. So I think that more than misconceptions, I'm pretty amazed by how much, you know, sort of information that it's, you know, not very well studied or proven, we're being bombarded by, and you know, people are sort of, you know, scared and freaking out in some ways. And you know, here we are, at almost the beginning of June, and you know, hopefully, in what will be a long tail, and after that, you know, sort of curve has, you know, reached its peak and is coming down, and I think we still have a lot of misinformation, and I feel like that's sort of perhaps the worst part about, you know, moving forward is not knowing, and you know, hopefully we'll be guided, and little by little we'll do the right thing.
Right.
I think that every day I learn something new from either someone or one of my friends or again, or a media or, you know, or some, you know, paper or some, you know, article. It's, you know, we have a lot coming our way. We just have to be incredibly patient.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the emotional strain of working in a hospital during this time. Could you talk a little bit about the mental health resources that are available to both health professionals and patients?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we've gotten so much better over the past 5 years at recognizing that the toll that, you know, ailment and tragedy and our daily lives as healthcare providers and as doctors or nurses take on our life. That we now have a very good arsenal of resources at our disposition to be able to face, you know, whatever challenges may come your way. I am not more than, you know, a day without receiving an email from, you know, the Center for Physician Wellbeing or the Center for Wellness or our, you know, our helps or our friends from this, from the again, from a psychiatric or psychological, you know, support group community to say, you know, hey, if you need to talk, here's, you know, 17 different resources. If you need to have a group chat, here's another, you know, things you could do. Or if you need to just break out and go and do some yoga, here's a place that, you know, we'll fund. And I think that the healthcare force has been very well, you know, sort of covered or resourced to be able to face the both alienation and sort of sadness and tragedy and toll that it takes to work through this pandemic and this crisis. Same thing applies to patients. I think that, in fact, a little bit even quicker, we've been now for better part of 15, 20 years really paying attention to the toll that it takes on a patient and their family to be, you know, again, affected by such a thing as a pandemic like this. That said, I think that remains to be proven whether, you know, moving forward, we'll be able to do a good job. And I think history will tell how we will be able to really sort of amend our, you know, fill the gaps that this crisis is likely to leave in all families and in all relationships. And I don't know. I think that is going to be a tough next, you know, year or so, trying to come this uphill road in what we will call the recovery mode, right? You know, just not just professionally, but I think financially, a lot of people are hurting tremendously and emotionally. And again, as the country starts to open and people, you know, sort of start to feel a little bit better, you know, time will tell. Again, I get sick almost every day to hear the word, what will the new normal be? And I have no idea. I think that my biggest worry, I think, is my kids, sort of the generation of young ones who are being raised amidst these unbelievable events like the pandemic that we just lived, that we're living through, or you know, all the other, just many of the other horrific events that they've been living through that I did not live through when I was their age, you know, 40, 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. But I do worry a little bit about the young ones, about the little kids and how they'll face these, and, you know, what effect will seeing everybody wear a mask around them will have. And, you know, imagine if you're 2 years old and your first, you know, social memories is everybody wearing some weird bandana or a mask.
Right.
I don't know. It's certainly something that neither you nor I actually ever experienced. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, that affects them 5, 10 years later. I don't know.
Definitely. Are there any important lessons that you feel you'll take away from working during the pandemic?
Yeah, I think that I'll take away a lot of positives that, you know, what an amazing workforce we have and what people can do when they get together and they pull together, and the sincere, you know, appreciation that I have for those around me and how lucky we are that we are where we are and not elsewhere. And I think I'll also just, you know, sort of come out of the pandemic with the takeaway of, you know, that it's okay to be afraid. I think that it taught us all that it was okay to be afraid. I think that there was a lot of skepticism about being scared and, you know, should we show fear? And do we show apprehension? And I think at the end, it became quite okay to say, yeah, I'm a little worried about this, that, and the other. And it became okay to not, you know, be all, you know, sort of cavalier about anything. So I think that I'll take away that there's okay to be vulnerable as well, you know? Mm-hmm. And so those things will stay with me for a while. And then I think, like I said, there'll be so many more silver linings that I can't even begin to tell you. But for me, it's also been a moment of a time to reflect on my profession and what I do. And, you know, the realities that when everybody's supposed to go home and, you know, lock themselves up, you know, we are supposed to go to work.
Right.
And that's our job. And, you know, the opportunity that I've had to spend time with my family and my wife and my kids, that's something I'll take away.